Canadian Outdoors. From Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your Outdoors Hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Hello, Jim Thorne, sitting in for V. Paul Reynolds tonight. V. Paul Reynolds is at our Southern Command, keeping the Florida coast safe and
safe.
and free from anything that might annoy him. I am Jim Thorne with the Northwoods Sporting Journal, your host tonight. Welcome. If you're just joining us tonight, we have a special program. I don't think I've ever been as excited as I am tonight to do a version of the Maine Outdoors. We have a wonderful guest, but before we get to our guest, behind our bulletproof glass over there, tending the fire, got something in your hand. Is that a cup of coffee or?
Not me.
No, not you. Okay. Mr. Norm Plord.
Hi, Norm. Good evening. Good. How you doing?
We're doing pretty good. Enjoy the weekend, did you?
Yeah, spent most of it in my cellar. Got all kinds of projects.
All right. Well, you didn't take part in the free fishing weekend, I assume.
No.
Yeah. Well, there'll be other weekends, right?
Sure, there will be. I got all kinds of plans.
Also, over there, behind the bulletproof glass, Mr. Blistered Fingers, Mr. Jim Layton.
Well, thank you, Jim. Good evening, everybody. Got a great show coming up tonight. Yeah. And Lorraine, you pay attention. This guy knows what he's talking about.
You said you had a few fishermen over on your lake today.
Well,
Fields
we
Pond?
Did it Fields Pond, yes. And you know, it always amazes me where they fish on the pond. They always seem to fish where the least fish are.
Yeah.
Instead of coming over where the weeds are, fish along the edge of the weeds. They're right out in the middle of the pond. I'm sure they have pretty good luck, but
well, it'd
be a lot quicker fishing if they fished where the fish were.
Well, that's right. You gave away the secret now, Jim.
Well, that's all right. I love to watch them catch the fish, especially the kids.
We'll see what they look like next weekend.
Huh? Yes.
All right. Well, as I had mentioned, tonight's guest, he is a 23-year veteran, former Chief Ranger at Baxter State Park, Mr. Chris Drew. Hello, Chris. How are you?
Hello. I'm just fine. Thank you.
Well, thank you for taking the trek down here tonight with your beautiful bride, Wally. Hi, Wally. How are you tonight?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Well, good. Glad to have you both here tonight. And you're going to tell us some tales from Baxter State Park.
Well, I'm glad to have that opportunity.
Yes.
I'll give you a little background where I come from. I was born in a place called Island Falls.
I know Island Falls. My dad was from Island Falls. Jim, you know anybody from Island Falls?
Well, yes. My sister Caroline lives right there in Crystal.
Yes, yep. Just between then and Patton.
Yes, that's right. And Mike.
Yeah, I was born there, but I migrated over to a place called Mount Chase, and that's as close to Baxter Park as I could get and still have electricity. Now, I'm happy to lock water in a pail, but my wife had other objections to that, so I had to go over there. So I'm only 15 miles from Baxter Park. I worked there for 36 years.
Wow. Yeah, when did you start at Baxter?
I started September 10th, 1972. I worked for Maine Public Service Company for 4 or 5 years before that, cutting right away on snowshoes and chainsaws, and it was kind of a relief to go to work for Baxter Park.
Yeah.
But what they did was they sent me to Chimney Pond. They hired me seasonally, and there's a guy named Barry Smith who ended up being a lieutenant for the state police up there at Holton, but he wanted to go back to school, so they hired me September 10th and told me I was going to work at Soudahunk. I never did see Soudahunk. They sent me down there to Togue Pond and said, report Mr. Homer King, which I did, and they sent me up to Togue Pond Gate. Now, that's an education. That's the busiest place in the park. I was there for 2 or 3 days, and then there's a guy named Joe Jassett needed to come down to the Chimney Pond. They said, "You go Chimney Pond." I never climbed Katahdin before, but I did that day. And I went up there and I covered him for 3 days, and they said, "Now you're going to go down Dacey Pond, cover for Ivan Roy."
Gee.
So I went down Dacey Pond, covered for Ivan Roy, and they said, "You're going back Togue Pond, back Chimney Pond, back Dacey Pond." And a fella got mad and quit Trout Brook, and he sent me up there, so I never did see Soudahunk.
Oh,
well, I'd only worked there. I hadn't worked there maybe a month, and they told me there was going to be hiring two rangers that year, but they wouldn't hire me because I had to work there a year. I said, okay, just glad to have the job. And they sent me up Trout Brook. I got the fellas Winter Wood in that was going to be in there. I worked hard. And they sent a fella up next month and says, "Why don't you fill out an application for one of them two jobs?" And the job I was going to take was be Junior York. He used to run Dacey Pond camps, and the park bought him out. That's what they did. We had a lease on it, and they bought him out. We took it over, and they give him a job, besides $50,000 or so, and sent him up there to Trout Brook Farm. Well, he got stung by a bee, got me a job.
Oh, there.
Got him a heart attack. So anyway, what happened? After 2 months, they sent somebody up and says, "Chris, why don't you go ahead and fill out this report?" And I said, "You told me I couldn't do it for another year." "Oh, no, you go ahead and do that." And I'm the only guy, near as I can tell, who's only worked there 2 months seasonal and get on, full time.
Well.
And they sent me to Chimney Pond, which is in those days like sending the warden to Daquam, seeing a gat, you know. Because everybody else had a truck.
Yeah.
And all I had was boots. And I walked 656 foot miles in 1973 on Mount Katahdin. And I went down supply, figured it'd give me a hard time, because when I was a kid, we had to pick taters for one pair of boots.
Yeah.
And they had to last me all year. Lonnie Pingree was supply ranger.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went in and I said, "Lonnie," I said, "I got to have another pair of boots." And he slapped them around the table. I said, "Ain't you going to say something?" Because I'd wear the toes out. It wasn't the soles. Because if you've climbed Katahdin, it's coarse granite, and you scuff your toes off, you know.
Right.
So anyway, he said, "No, Chris," he says, "it's an awful lot cheaper to keep you in leather than rubber." See, all the other boys had trucks. See, all I had was boots. I was cheap. I had no place to go with that. And I was up there 1 year, but I had a lot of experiences covering winter parties up there.
Yeah.
And people don't realize how cold it is up there.
And you're talking now at Chimney Pond.
I'm talking Mount Katahdin and Chimney Pond. And, and in those days, if you as a ranger had Chimney Pond, you had to cover all the winter parties. When I got in a position of authority, we rotated it.
Yeah.
Because you can be up there 2 weeks, 10 weeks to a time. I mean, 10 days to a time.
Yeah. And are you talking all the, like the Adirondack lean-tos and so forth? And
well, see, what we have up there, we have about 500-plus people that climb Katahdin in the wintertime just to test their mountain gear and equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to be going to Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be going down to South America. And they're going to be going over in the Himalayas. And we have the same weather. People don't realize it. We have Arctic plants on top of Katahdin.
Right.
I've seen the wind chill up there. This is no exaggeration. I've seen the wind chill up there exceed the chart. That's minus 129. I had 1 week up there where it never got any warmer than a wind chill of minus 80. And I restricted everybody to the bunkhouse because if they go out there and get numbed up, we can't get them. We've had people freeze death up there. You know, if you don't get them in 24 hours and that stuff, you know, you're out of luck.
Yeah.
But when you have the winds, you have drifting. And I had my wife up there and two kids. This was in the winter of 73 to kind of dress a camp up because there'd been a bunch of bachelors up there and she'd pretty rough shape, you know.
Yeah.
So we went up there and we had about a 3-foot snowstorm, which is not unusual. You have more precipitation on the high ground, you do the low ground.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with rain. You always have clouds around Katahdin, so you don't know when it can be clear everywhere else.
Sure.
So I was up there. This is in April. Had a 30-inch snowstorm. Of course, the wind swirls around because Chimney Pond is in a basin. It's in a cirque. Get a 2,000-foot head wall, circular, and the wind goes round, 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 and it drifts. I get up in the morning. The wife wants some firewood. She's cold. I went out, and I couldn't find a woodshed. Now, it was there the day before, and this sucker, you know, is about 16 feet long, 10 feet wide, and probably 10 feet high, and it was gone.
Jeez.
So I'm up there on snowshoes. And I knew where it was the day before, and I dug down about a foot, and I come to the ridgepole, you know, the line, and I shoveled that out, and I knew the door was half the length of the building, but you got the slope of the roof, and you can't see where the roof is. So I went out 5 paces and dug down 10 feet 6 inches before I got the door.
Wow.
Where do you throw the snow in a 10-foot hole? You throw it up, it comes down. So I had to cut steps. the last 3 or 4 feet to get the snow out to get the wood. And I want you to know, my wife pretty near froze to death before she got that first stick of wood, and that's plenty warm. Now, if you think that's a problem, you want to go to the outdoor toilet after you've had a snowstorm up there. You got an outdoor toilet, you know.
Yes.
And the door side of that toilet, okay, is where it drifts. The backside, the wind hits it and blows it back. You've probably seen a building where the wind hits it and blows it back. There's no snow on the backside of that toilet.
No.
So I put my snowshoes on. I went up there, and the thing had 4 foot drift on it. Well, I wasn't going to go back and get a shovel, so I took a snowshoe off. If you've got a good snowshoe, you can grab the tail end of it, put your hand up where the toes is, and you can shovel. It's kind of coarse, but you can open her up.
Yeah.
So I opened her up. Now I don't have to go. So I go back to the toilet, go back to camp, give myself pep talk, go back up there and get in. Now you got to lift the lid. You don't know what a thermal draft is until you see 50 miles an hour up that hole. And not only that, you got rime ice all the way around it, and you sit on that. It's like sitting on 1,000 icicles, and you're going to be there to ice out, so you got to scrape that off because that's generated from the heat of the manure. You always leave the lid open. You don't shut the sucker. So anyway, it don't take you long to do your business. Let me tell you that right now. It don't take very long. But you have a logistical problem. You say, well, what's that problem? I said, getting rid of the toilet paper. As you throw it down, it comes right back up between your knees, and it goes around and around inside that building, and you're ducking and dodging, trying not to get hit side to head with it. And I want you to know, it takes good hand-eye coordination. Catch that paper where it's white.
Chris, I think that would be a good time to
for
talk
a break.
About, yeah, let's just so I can catch my breath just for a minute. Let's talk about the trivia question, because what I'm going to do tonight is I'm going to give away a recent copy of the Maine Antler and Skull Trophy Club book, which is very informative to everybody that likes to look at all the deer and antler and trophy and moose and bear and all that. So what we're going to do, you go ahead and read the trivia question, and I'll tell everybody what number to call if they think they know the answer.
What year was Baxter State Park established?
What year was Baxter State Park established? If you think you know the answer, 1-800-966-1039. We'll be right back. 1-800-966-1039.
More Maine Outdoors next on 101.3 Augusta, 103.9 Bangor, 95.1 Rockland, the voice of Maine.
Welcome back to the Maine Outdoors. I'm your host for the evening, Jim Thorne from the Northwoods Sporting Journal. And our guest this evening is a retired 23-year chief ranger from Baxter State Park, Chris Drew, and his wife Wally in the studio tonight with us. And before we went on break, we asked the trivia question, what year was Baxter State Park established? We've got a caller on the line that thinks they know the answer to that. Hello, caller. Are you on the air? Are you on the line?
Oops, you got Norm. Put the
we'll try it
up.
Again.
Put the other one up.
No.
Are you there, caller?
Yeah.
Okay, we can't hear you.
Yeah, put them both up. Try it now, caller.
I got two callers.
Try that again. Okay. Yeah, we can't make them out. I'm not sure why.
Okay.
I'm here.
There you go.
There you go. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Yeah, this is Ben.
Ben, where are you calling from, Ben?
Down east.
Down east Maine. Well, it's a good night down there if it's a good night up here. Good temperatures. Did you get out this weekend, do any fishing?
No, a little warmer today than it was yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday was pretty raw.
Yeah.
Did you hear the question?
You can repeat it if you want.
Yeah. What year was Baxter State Park established?
Oh, I'm going to say... It's kind of a tricky one because I know the governor had been working on it for a number of years, but I'll say 1931.
What do you say, Chris?
You got it right.
Right there. Chris says you're right. Looks like it was March 3rd, 1931. That was 89 years ago. 89 wow. years ago, Baxter State Park was established, and that was, as we all know, thanks to Percival J. Baxter, our former governor of the great state of Maine, and he donated that to the state of Maine. So,
one of the gems up here in the state of Maine.
Yes, and continues to be. So,
mm.
Well, good, Ben. I have a copy of the Mastic book for you, and before don't hang up when we say goodbye, and Norm will get your address, and I'll get that out in the mail to you. Anything else on your mind tonight from the Maine Outdoors?
No, just trying to stay with
you. Yeah, you ever been to Baxter State Park?
One time,
yeah. Yeah, no, there's a lot of folks that, you know, they drive by, they see it, and it's like anything. Booth Bay Harbor's like that. Unless you got a reason to go to Booth Bay Harbor, you don't go to Booth Bay Harbor. So
that's right.
It's pretty to look at on the way by Baxter, Mount Katahdin, and so forth. But like I say, unless you got a reason, I guess, to go there specifically. Well, all right. Thank you, Ben. Congratulations. And I'll give you over to Norm, and he'll get your address, and we'll get that out to you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Have a good night.
You too. Well, we got going so so quick and early with Chris that we zipped right by a couple things that we were going to talk about tonight on the Maine Outdoors. One of them, which is the Maine Game Wardens are hiring this year. The hiring process will begin on in April of this year, but it's not too early. And they have seminars going on all over the state. So let's see. I guess the next one coming up is in Gray, and that's on Wednesday, February 19th. And then they also have one concurrently on February 19th up in Presque Isle. And that's at the Presque Isle Police Department up there. And down in Gray, it's at the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife, the Gray office conference room over there by the Game Farm Road. So, and then they run all the way. There's Fort Kent on the 25th of February, Machias on the 27th, Sydney on the 25th, Holton on the 27th of February, Scarborough, Millinocket on March 3rd, Belfast, Ellsworth, all the way down through Farmington on March 16th. So go to Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife and click on the information seminars and see if you can find one near you. All right. Well, if you're listening to us tonight, you're listening to us on WVOM FM 103.9 Bangor, 101.3 FM in Augusta, and 95.1 FM out of Rockland. And the number here, if you have a question for Chris or anything that you'd like to talk about tonight, 1-800-966-1039. And also want to remind everybody the podcasts are online. So if you've missed any of the episodes of the Maine Outdoors and you'd like to go back and listen to some other ones, just go to WVOMFM.com. And click on the Maine Outdoors link, and there below we'll have all the previous shows and the dates and so forth, and you can just listen to them at your leisure. So, all right. Well, again, with me tonight is former chief ranger at Baxter State Park from 1985 to 2008, Mr. Chris Drew. And Chris, before we went on break, you were telling us some of the finer points of life on Baxter.
Catching toilet paper.
Catching toilet paper up on Chimney Pond.
Trying to catch it in your hands, what you're trying to do.
Yeah, and we're going to change the subject because my throat hurt from laughing about that one. So we're going to. I always wanted to ask you, I mean, did you ever have, you had a lot of folks come up and ask you a lot of questions, I'm sure, some of them probably humorous to you. Did you ever have anybody come up and ask it about Don Fendler?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Don used to come up every year up Dacey Pond, and he'd sign books for people.
Yeah.
And very interesting man. You know, it never went to his head that he survived. He was quite grateful for it.
For those that may not know, might be listening tonight, Don Fendler got lost on Mount Katahdin.
That was 1939.
1939. He was 12 years old, I think it was.
He was lost 9 days. He ended up coming down with Sadaquit and coming out on the East Branch.
Hmm.
And he was a tough guy. You know, I mean, he was a kid, but he didn't have any sense of direction. Now, I met him 60 years later. I met him different times, but they had a big to-do up there 60 years after that, you know.
Yeah.
Up at Katahdin Stream, had a big lobster feed, and he come up, and there's a guy named Fred Eaton who was with him during that hike.
Hmm.
They're buddies.
Okay.
And every time Don come up, he'd stay at Fred's, even when they're grown men. So this is interesting. You'll enjoy this.
Yeah.
As they had a big feed, and Don asked Fred, he says, Fred, what are you going to do after it's over? And he said, I'm going to go fishing up Grassy Pond, he said. So Fred said, Don, he said, what are you going to do? He said, I'm going to go back and they'll knock it. Okay.
Hmm.
So I don't know if you're familiar with the park, but anyway, if you go to Katahdin Stream, you have to go right to go up there to Grassy and Tracy and Elbow and them places, and you go left, go Millnocket. So Fred is up there, and he's rigging his fishbowl up, and here comes Don Fendler. And Fred says, well, where are you going? He says, I'm going to Millnocket. Well, he said, you probably better turn that car around. See, so it didn't make no difference. 60 years ain't changed too much. You got a sense of direction. No, you don't, you know. I laughed when he told me that. But what's interesting, the first ranger in Baxter State Park was a guy named Dick Holmes, 1939. There was an article in the Echo magazine about a wonderful story.
Hmm.
And he never did meet Don Fendler. So 60 years later, they invited him up to meet him. He said he'd been looking for him for 60 years and finally got a chance to meet him.
Yeah.
Situation like that. Don was a wonderful man, and he really inspired a lot of children.
Yeah.
By coming, and he'd go around to schools.
Oh, yeah.
And, spend a lot of time.
My grandson this fall, who was 13 years old, I took him up in the woods hunting, and I can't remember the band now, but it's kind of a banjo folky band. And they put a CD out, and there was a song on there about Don Fendler, lost on a mountain in Maine. And it was kind of a haunting rendition with a female vocalist. And my grandson keyed up on it, and he says, I wrote a book report on Don Fendler this year in school. And he listened to that song and the story, and, it was riveting. You know, a kid that age, you know, picturing himself lost on Mount Katahdin, which is pretty rugged country. By himself with no support and
remarkable
either way.
They figure that most children will not survive over 3 days in the woods, and he was in their nine. He was a Boy Scout, you know, you give that credit. He went downstream, he had water.
Yeah.
Black flies were a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in fact, people ask me, say, Chris, when's the best time to go up there and back to park? And I look at him. I says, if I don't like you, I said, I'll tell you last week May, first 3 weeks in June. Because that's when those black flies play a game on you, you know.
I hiked Katahdin twice, and in August there were still black flies when you get right about the top of the tree line.
Yeah, the only thing's going to save you is wind.
Yeah, yeah.
Up there in a place like that. But that's the only thing about Baxter State Park. I had two sisters come up from Arizona in bikinis up there 1 year.
Yeah, well.
I had two rangers in love with them.
Uh-huh.
And they put so many Band-Aids on them, by and by they had more Band-Aids and did bikinis because they thought they was going to scar up, and they never come back.
No, I did. I watched guys, you know, pass me in Crocs, going up those granite rocks in Crocs.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm, you know, it's all I can do to, I've got all the right gear on and everything. So different strokes for different folks. Well, there's certainly, you know, when you spend that much time. And you were a year-round ranger, so summer,
it didn't make
winter,
no difference.
Yeah. And you've probably been to the summit a few times.
Well, I walked 656 foot miles on Katahdin just 1 year, 1973, and that ain't counting all the search and rescues and stuff we've done up there since. So,
yeah,
I don't have any 1,000 miles. Lester Kenway, the trail supervisor, had over 7,000 miles on Katahdin, just put in rock stone. Mm. Walkways and stuff like that, and water bars and such. Now, that's a lot of miles on one mountain, 7,000 miles.
Yeah. Hold that thought. We got to pay a few more bills. We'll be right back after these messages with Chris Drew, former chief ranger at Baxter State Park. Welcome back to the Maine Outdoors. I'm your host for the evening, Jim Thorne, Northwoods Sporting Journal.
Hi, Jim.
Hi, Jim.
That fellow that wrote that song that he was talking about,
yes.
His name is Stan Keach. and his band is called the Sandy River Ramblers.
Yes, yes.
And you can look it up online, Sandy River Ramblers.
Yeah.
And he's written many, many songs. He's quite famous, as a matter of fact.
Well, it was a capturing song. I do remember that.
Oh, yes. Yep.
If you're just joining us, our guest tonight is retired 23-year chief ranger at Baxter State Park, Mr. Chris Drew. And Chris, I hold here in my hands a 2016 issue of the Northwoods Sporting Journal. And one of our acclaimed writers, Mr. Matt LaRoche, of the Allegash Wilderness Waterways, he wrote a little line in here, and I want to read it to our listeners. He says, "The muskrat nymph was a mystery fly to me until a few years ago when I caught a fish that had apparently snapped the leader of Chris Drew's fly line, leaving the muskrat nymph in the lip of the fish. Chris, now retired, was chief ranger of Baxter State Park, and he guarded his fishing methods very closely. Once I had the infamous fly in hand, it was a simple matter to start copying it. I must say, they work well. Thanks, Chris." And that was an article that Matt LaRoche wrote in the Northwoods Sporting Journal a few years back about a fly that you were known to have caught a few trout with. So that's kind of a little secret that's not a secret anymore, but they don't have the fly, so I guess therein lies the...
You know, I see them fellas. I see Matt up there. In fact, he used to take Wiggy Robinson up there, and you folks know Wiggy very well. He was here quite a lot. He was a guide up there. He was a little gentleman. He was a hard fly fisherman. He had a favorite pond called Mecca, and I bumped onto that pond down there, and then he had someone steal a canoe out of it, and I tried to find it for him, but I couldn't do that. But Wiggy was very familiar with Baxter State Park, all the ponds, all the streams, and Matt would take him up to this place where we'd fish for brook trout, and this is up Webster Lake watershed. And I was on one side of the stream one day, and I was having good luck, and they was doing awful poor on the other, and they watched me pretty hard. And So anyway, it wasn't me that lost the fish. It was Rod Angotti, the maintenance supervisor. He's the one to give up that fly.
Oh, yeah.
But they'd seen me fish it, and they knew the technique. And he has his brother Tom up there. Almost every time I met him, he had his brother Tom, because Matt has a camp on the public land side of Webster Lake. Webster Lake is half in the park and half out of the park.
Okay.
And he has a camp right up handy. So he's right in the middle of the good fishing.
Yeah.
You know, he's got that down pat. And one day I was up there, and I was up early, and he was in there, and he has a dog, and I think it was an English setter. It's a nice dog. And Matt had forgot the key to get in down through there. Bangor Hydro used to keep a padlock on that, and it wasn't very easy to get down in there, but if you was a ranger, you could, because that's how we accessed Webster Lake, and our campsites was down through by way of Telos Dam.
Yeah.
And Matt was there, and he had a dog with him, and he caught that dog on a back cast. You never see a dog hustle across a body of water so much in your life. You did that fly in him. Well, I caught the dog, but I didn't dare detract the fly, afraid I'd lose a hand or something. So I had Matt come up there and take that fly out of his back. You ask him about that if he remembers that. And the fish were taking about a number 14, 16 caddis that day.
Yeah.
And they're taking on top, and he'd gone all the way in there. He'd forgot his key, so he had to walk in. And it was getting dusk, and he's getting frustrated. So I gave him – I had a size 16 cat. He got a nice 16-inch trout. So he got his dog patched up and got a nice fish, and away he went. You see him sometime. You ask him.
Yeah,
you'll see more than I do.
I'll see him. He got the shows. He's usually down at the shows.
He is.
He's a good guy. Loves to fish.
Oh, yeah. I guess he does. You know, he likes to hunt, too, you know.
Yeah.
It ain't just fishing.
Yeah, and you hunt. You've...
Well, I've killed 23 deer with handguns.
Well, there. That's...
I've got four deer in the skull, the main Skull and Trophy Antler Club.
Oh, okay.
I got one with a handgun, I got one with a shotgun, and I got two with muzzle loaders. And I shot a 10-point buck with a cap and ball pistol one year.
Wow.
Yeah.
By mistake, or...
Well, I'll tell you how I shot that one.
I fired out to do that. That's quite a compliment.
I started it. Well, I was carrying me a 54 caliber single shot pistol made by Kanken, Minnesota. That was before Thompson Center came out with Scout. And this cussed buck came walking by me. I was up in T6 I-10, not far from Hudson Pond, snowing, cold.
Yeah.
And I could hear the antlers kind of beating its way through, and here comes this buck. He stopped about 40 yards from me, right behind a bunch of trees, and all I could see was his eye and his nose and half his head. So I said, I'm going to try poking him in the eye. I had a scope on this pistol. Mm. But I hit the bark and didn't get the deer. And the deer run downwind, and I said, I'm all done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my Ruger Old Army cap and ball is a .45 caliber. Actually, it's .457 caliber round ball, 129 grain round ball, 40 grains powder. And I had that shoot partridge and rabbits with. Okay, so I got that on my hip, and I got this other thing on my chest, and I'm loading that. I had some buck lure on the back of my pack on a rag, and that cussed deer ran downwind blowing, stopped to see what the heck made all that noise, smelt that doe in heat, and come running right back. So here I am, half loaded up on, I'm trying to load this pistol. I have to drop it. I mean, I ain't got no time.
Right.
And I pull out my cap and ball. That deer stopped 40, I think it was 41 paces from me. And I shot it high in the ribs. Now, that's about the power of a .38 special. Ain't nothing to brag about. Yeah. I hadn't planned on shooting deer with it.
Yeah.
That deer went 222 paces. I waited a half an hour. And it was still standing when I come to it, but blood was coming up its nose and stuff there. And it was swaying. Mm-hmm. And his lungs was filling up. I shot a high in the lungs. So I got the deer. Doggone lucky, no, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
It ain't very often you shoot a deer and have it run back.
No.
Situation like that. But it was a 3.5 mile drag.
Whoa.
And we had three people at hunting camp, and we had this idiot award. And that's the fellow that shoots the deer the furthest from camp. And I held that award for 2 or 3 years.
Get you in shape, though.
Oh, yeah, get you in shape. Kill me now.
Wow. Wow.
I also have a copy of Down East Magazine. Down East Magazine did a story on you a few years ago, and it was Baxter's Wilderness Character. And there's a picture of you there.
Yeah,
Was that on purpose or by accident?
Well, this is what happened. They sent a feller up, Down East did, this is a few years ago, before I retired. And he said he was sent up. He says, follow me around, take pictures. And then he said they're going to send a writer up afterwards to write a story about them pictures. And I said, don't you have anybody down there sharp enough to take pictures and write stories same time? and I said, this is what's going to happen. I said, this is going to happen. I said, we're putting a trail in around towards Katahdin Lake. And I said, that's where I'm going to be, your trail crew. And I said, it's going to be hard going. I said, this ain't going to be no, photo op. I said, we're working. So I worked him pretty hard.
Going to be hoofing her.
I worked him pretty hard. But he liked to fly fish. And he come back. He says, well, I got to put another day in. He said, I'm staying up Kidney Pond. He said, you know where I catch a fish? I said, of course I know where you can catch a fish. And I told him where to go. He was a happy guy.
Yeah.
So anyway, he disappeared after that next day. And about a year and a half later, I give up on the writer. About a year and a half later, this woman shows up and says, I'm here to write a story. She says, I figured she must have got lost or something. I mean, it took a long time to come back up there from down there in the coast, up there to Baxter Park. And I told her the same thing. I says, what I do, you're going to do.
Yeah.
And she was very generous. It was, she was very kind on that article. I called her up and thanked her.
Yeah. No, it was a well-written article and definitely painted you in a, appropriate picture with Baxter State Park in the background and a good steward ambassador for Baxter State Park for many years. And I'm sure you're still carrying that torch.
Well, for many years I was a kind of a goodwill ambassador. In the wintertime, things would be slow other than Mount Katahdin and hauling supplies in the chimney and Russell. We have to haul propane tanks and lumber and stuff like that. But.
And for folks that don't know, I mean, Baxter is not to be commercially advertised. I know that just because my job with advertising in the Northwood Sporting Journal and stopped by the Baxter State Park headquarters there in Millinocket and have a conversation with them, and they just say, they simply don't advertise that. So do you have any thoughts on Katahdin Woods and Waters sidling up?
Yeah, I had no objection with that. I hate to see the feds get in anything. I'd like to have some people have some say in it locally,
put them
on a committee of odds and ends. But basically, I got a kick out of Roxanne Quimby, and she bought the land. Oh, God, everybody hated her. She was a witch.
Mm.
And I said, well, it ain't nothing. Governor Baxter was a son of a witch. I said, I could say other words, but I won't. So anyway, what happened was, is when he bought that piecemeal, he started in 1931. and he didn't get done until about 1969, you know, was his last purchase. But he was hated by the locals up there because there was restrictions put on. They couldn't camp where they want. They couldn't build fires where they want. They couldn't hunt no more a lot of places. And, you know, it is a game preserve. And, I mean, if you looked at the editorials in the newspapers, boy, I tell you, he was a son of a gun. He was hated. And in Roxanne Quimby, the same thing.
Right.
And but 50 years later, oh, my God, nice people. You know, it's wonderful. We know we're awful glad that he did that and, you know, yeah. you know, so on and so forth. And Woods and Waters the same way. The thing that I like about it, if they don't ruin it, and it's too bad they wouldn't hire some local people because it'll be their own people, you know, that they have come in. But the Wissatiko Stream watershed is pristine, and that'll maintain that. That is one of the last pristine waters that we have in the state of Maine, and that goes right through the heart of it. You got the East Branch. Thoreau went down through there, so you know it isn't going to be developed too much. You know, mm-hmm. what's there is all right. You know, you got bowling camps, which is good, and you get some other places down through there.
Sure.
But I think long term, in 30 or 40 years, it'll be more beneficial then than it is now, simply because it borders on the Baxter State Park. It just makes that wild area that much wilder.
Well, we have to pay homage to one of our sponsors, to the Maine Outdoors, General Appliance Services over on 91 Center Street in Brewer, Mr. Al Elkin and his appliance services, gas appliances. He has them all. He has the unique brand. He has stoves. He has ranges. He has composting toilets.
Ride the wave, baby.
Jim, where'd you come from? I wasn't expecting that.
He's the man behind the wall.
And they also have Servel and services all lines of gas and appliances. So if you have that in your future, if you have it at your camp, if you think you need to upgrade or you need to replace or you're having any problems with anything, give Al a call over there in Brewer. His number is 989-4341. He's located over on 91 Center Street in Brewer, and he gets high marks from everyone that I speak to, and he's actually going to be doing the sportsman shows, I'm sure, this year again. Just looking at the, let's see, Vic Morin and the crew for the Northwood Sporting Journal. This coming weekend, they're going to be going down to the Springfield Sportsman Show. That's February 21st through the 23rd down in West Springfield, Massachusetts. And then the Orono Sportsman Show is March 13th through the 15th in Orono. And let's see, Presque Isle Fish and Game Club will be putting on a sportsman show March 21st and 22nd up at Umpy in Presque Isle. And then I believe the following weekend is the Augusta Sportsman Show. So,
and there's also the Cabin Fever Reliever in yes. Brewer. That's February 29th and March 1st.
So that's coming right up.
And that's a free one.
Couple weekends from now, right?
Correct. Yes. Yep.
And that's over at the Brewer Auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great Always. Hot dogs.
Great hot dogs.
Chili.
Great place to bring kids.
Sure. It's excellent,
It's close. It's intimate. It's, you know, you get a chance to talk to a lot of people over there about fishing and fly tying and all kinds of good things. So,
A lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Well, that's what I say. When you look for Al Elkin, look for the guy with the little conductor hat there, the black and white striped conductor's hat. That's Al Elkin. He'll be talking about his appliances there at the Sportsman Show. So stop by and say hi and tell him Maine Outdoors sent you. If you're just joining us tonight, our guest tonight is retired Chief Ranger for Baxter State Park, Chris Drew. And he's joined by his wife, Wally, tonight. They're both here in the studio telling us a few stories. Chris, I know we're not going to be able to touch on half of what we'd like to talk about, but a couple things come to mind when I think about being on Baxter. Obviously, when I climbed it, we stopped. We went from Roaring Brook up to Chimney Pond, and we dropped our backpacks. And I can remember still we had to take the food, and we had to hoist it way up in the air on those lines, those barrel, what they call them, a bear line, or... Yeah. And then we did the ascent up Cathedral and touched the top and came back down. The saddle. And then we spent the night in the Adirondacks up there at Chimney Pond. Beautiful spot. It was most memorable for me, and I plan to take the grandkids up there, and we may only go as far as Chimney Pond.
You don't have to go beyond Chimney Pond. It's fantastic. Yeah. It's basically a Rocky Mountain view at a main price.
Oh, yeah.
You have a 2,000-foot headwall up there, and at Basin Ponds, there's Trouton Basin Ponds. If you've got the North Basin and South Basin for a backdrop, you'd swear to God you're out there in Montana or Idaho or somewhere.
Yeah,
You know, it's that pretty.
Yeah. No, and so bears.
Oh, bears. Oh, my gosh.
Did you have any?
I could keep you going bear stories for 2 days. I've handled over 60 bears in Baxter State Park. The most I've taken out one day is 8, and I climbed trees for 6 of them.
Wow. Tranquilizer?
Oh, yeah, tranquilizer. Yeah. I'd have to climb up with a jab stick. And that's interesting because what happens was the feds get after us to close their dumps because the bear used to come to the dumps.
Mm.
You could have as many as 15, 16 bears to a time out there. Well, when they close the dumps, what do you suppose they did? They come in the campgrounds.
Sure.
Well, that was job security for me.
Yeah.
But I got awful tired of it. But I had this the key thing is to keep your food away from where you're sleeping. Now, I had a pair of honeymooners up there at Chimney Pond. There's honeymooners, and I believed them. She sleeps 3 o'clock in the afternoon taking a nap there, resting up. And all I can think of, you fly fish, spent wing mayfly. She had to be laying on her back because she heard something, and something was standing up over her, and it was the biggest bear I ever handled in Baxter Park.
Wow.
Standing up over her with her paws extended, going for a pack that was in the back of the lean-to because she thought it was going for her.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I'm down the ranger station. The walls is pretty well insulated. There's a forest between me and them, and I could hear that screaming pretty loud. And I look, and there goes that bear just a-hoofing her out of there. Now, they don't like loud noises. And I want you to know men can scream, too.
Oh, yeah.
So I figured someone's being murdered or raped or throttled or something, so I go down there. And this woman now has developed a speech impediment. She spoke pretty clearly the day before, but now she's having trouble with her bees.
A bee.
I said, what's the problem? Bear. Where are you from? Boston. She wasn't long getting out of there. So the important thing is food. Now, at Chimney Pond, when I left, Lauren Good come up and his wife and family, and they had a bear in the toilet. And it wasn't the upper level. He wasn't toilet trained.
No.
And you'll say, what's that bear doing in the toilet? Well, a bear ain't a whole lot different than people. You get a man and woman going in the toilet, you know, and they drop the drawers and the quarter falls down through there, and one fella look at that and say, it's a good place for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Another fella drop a dime, spend all day trying to fish it out, see. So, I mean, it's the same thing with bears. Well, what this bear was doing, he wasn't doing what you were thinking he was doing. Baxter State Park is a carry and carry out area.
Yeah.
And we expect people to haul the trash out. And you always got people that ain't. And they're looking around to see where the ranger is. When you ain't around, they'll go in that toilet and they'll lift the lid and throw a garbage bag down there. Well, a bear comes along. Some more fussy than others. And, hey, this is pretty good, you know.
Yeah.
So he takes and he digs a hole in the backside and he literally slides on in. Now, if you think about it, he ain't a black bear no more. He's more of a brown bear. But anyway, he's in there. And this young lady comes along. Now, she has to use that toilet. No, if you don't use a toilet, you know, you gas up, cramp up, it's an awful way to die. Yeah. And but she went in that toilet, and she had that feeling something was watching her, and she shined a flashlight down that toilet seat, and this black nose come right up through the seat.
Yeah.
God, she screamed awful. I'd give them anything she'd sat on it. She'd scream more. But anyway, she went out that door and slammed that door hard and scared the bear so bad he would not come out.
Oh.
So Lauren Good got a bunch of campers. And they went and tipped the toilet over to get the bear out. And I says, we don't want to publicize this because nobody will use the toilet up here at Chimney Pond. We'll be digging up these manure piles all through the woods, you know. Well, about 20 years later, I was down Park headquarters. And this, now, because you have to understand, the people that helped him would be, you know, teenage type age. Yeah. Okay. So I'm down there. This guy is telling the girls down, the reservation ladies down there, says, you know, the most fun I ever had, he said, in my life, Chimney Pond, he says, tipping a toilet over, get a bear out. Because you never forget that in your lifetime.
No.
Never would you ever forgive that. You just wouldn't do it. Just wouldn't. But back to the, I'll tell you when, do I have time or I quit?
You do.
Okay. This is a day that I hauled out 8 bears in one day, and I called 6 of them. What we had is we had a sow bear. They had 4 cubs. That's unusual.
Mm-hmm.
Normally it's 1 to 3. But you have to eat a lot more garbage and trash to feed 4 cubs than you do 2. So it's to lactate.
Yeah.
So this sow started out Katahdin Stream one day. She'd be at Dacey Pond the next, Kidney Pond the next, over to Foster Field, and but then back to Katahdin Stream. But you didn't know which one from day to day. And I'm up at sow to hunk. And I'd get called and she'd be gone. Well, I got this call. She was down at Katahdin Stream. She was inside the Volkswagen camper. Now, you don't leave your food inside where you're sleeping. You know, it's like that gal in there. And you don't, you know, you don't leave your – and the Volkswagen campers had a vent in the top, see, where it had a mesh or something.
I remember.
She came down through that, and she was in there. So I opened the door and hooped and hollered and got her going. I chased her. And she's only one of two bears that's ever charged me. Now, I always carried a .44. And I chased her down. I chased her down through the parking lot, and she went in the woods. You never turn your back on a bear. Now, this is something you want to remember. It's just like a dog. If you're going down a street and a dog comes down someone's driveway and comes after you, and you run, you got company. Mm. But if you face it, it'll be a Mexican standoff. See, you don't turn your back to them. That's why these joggers and bikers get mountain lions. We'll get them once in a while, and all, because it's a
prey.
It's a prey to them. See, yeah. So anyway. I chased her down through the campground, turned around and come back. Apparently, she stopped and was watching me. And I could hear gravel grating. Mm. And she's on a dead charge. I had a 44 minute. I didn't want to kill her. Mm. She had all them cubs. So I shot her. You know, if she'd been on my leg, I would have. But anyway, but situation was I shot gravel in her face. 44 Magnum's pretty loud.
Yeah.
And, and she was gone. Well, about 4 or 5 days later, I got a call. And she's with them four cubs down the Foster Field group area, which is up the mouth of Kidney Pond Road. And I got there, and that, sure enough, she was there, and I couldn't catch her in a live trap.
Minute and a half.
Okay. I get a minute and a half?
Yep.
Okay. So anyway, what happens, I had Fred Goodwin make me a I got an old secondhand shotgun that had turned to a tranquilizer gun by the biologist. And I went down there, and there was a scout troop there.
Yeah.
And I said, look, I got to get all these cubs, because if they're left, a male bear will kill any cub he can get his hands on, paws on. So there was a group then. These are all Boy Scouts, you know. And I said, they're explorer age. I said, any boys have run cross country or track? Yeah, a bunch of them did. I said, you're with me. That's what we're going to do. I said, we're going to cut a switch for each of you boys. And each one of you's got this cub, that cub, that cub, and that cub. And I said, I'm going to shoot Mama Bear with a tranquilizer gun. She's going to run 400 yards. I got to go with her, or I won't find her because I got no snow tracker.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, your job is to scream for them guys, and they go up a tree. And then you take that switch and beat them in the buns. And keep them up there like I'm along. We got them all out of there.
Yeah.
Then I went up in the saddle hunt and got three more.
Oh, there.
So that was 8 in one day, and we had to take them 100 miles.
That was a busy bear day.
Yeah.
Well, Chris Drew, former ranger at Baxter State Park, thank you for coming down, spending the night with us, and telling a story or two. Wally, thank you for being his accomplice and coming along tonight.
Hearing crime.
We enjoyed having you guys in the studio. Just want to let the listeners know we did get the it's going to be a great hosting schedule in March. We just got that out. Matt Dunlap, Bob Mercer, myself, Aaron Merrill of the Northwood Sporting Journal, Bob Lehman, and Sergeant John McDonald, all in March. And next weekend, I have the show, and I have a businessman who once ran for governor twice. If you think you know who it was, stop by right here next week on Maine Outdoors.